We'll call the House Tax Committee to order January 27, 2011, the hour of 10:15. Having arrived, we will start the committee legislative assistant will note the roll, and we will officially call the meeting to order when we have a quorum. And then we'll go through the approval of the minutes. But we're very fortunate today to have with us Dr. Paul Wilson, Research Director of the Minnesota Department of Revenue, to review with the committee the tax expenditure budget. And we will get right to Dr. Wilson. One more. And members, you have a an additional handout. It says Research Division Studies and Statistics. We like to have names on things. That's from me. So we will just, you can take a look at that and keep that for future reference. Okay, Dr. Wilson. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you could state your name and who you represent for the record, I will be, not rudely, but I will be interrupting you. As soon as we have a quorum, just take care of a few things. In fact, we'll do it right now. We'll officially call the meeting to order the House Tax Committee, January 27, 2011. The committee legislative assistant is noting the roll here. Representative Marquardt moves the minutes from January 25th. Any additions or corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The Marquardt motion prevails.
I won one.
Anybody that can beat Mr. Volker in wrestling has won more than one. Okay, Dr. Wilson, welcome to the committee, sir, and if you could please make your presentation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Wilson. I'm the Director of the Tax Research Division of the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And I'm here today to present, give you a presentation and talk about the tax expenditure budget, tax expenditure report. I do want to say I believe that you were given a one-page, pages, were they? You were given a one-page document.
Yes, Doctor, we have.
Yeah, just let me say just a word about that document. Our web page is not very user-friendly, and we're working on it at the Department of Revenue with a major redesign coming in a year or so. But this there's a lot of information on our research division and some of the property tax research pages that I just wanted to provide you with information, particularly for the new people, of how to get to the page and also what's there. On the list, the first thing listed is the tax handbook. Now, it's online, and Mr. Chair, the updated version of the tax handbook will be here Monday, I believe, Monday or Tuesday, and will be distributed to all members, I believe. So, but this is a very handy document to keep sort of in your, keep with you, answers a lot of questions about history, rates, where the money goes, how much is collected in recent years. And there are other studies as well that are listed there. I would call attention to a couple of things. We have a lot of tax rankings information on our website that is updated regularly. It is referred to by the Federation of Tax Administrators as the best location for sort of updating the information on an ongoing basis. We're not trying to compete with the Minnesota Taxpayer Association, but it's somewhat the same information. We also have some tables showing tax collections history. If you want the history of a particular tax through time, going back to the 60s or 70s, the only place I know of to get that information easily is to go to our website and look at the history page. We have a bunch of different charts and tables. But again, a lot of this is new from a year ago, and we're trying to expand the information we provide. And so I just would encourage people to take a look at our website. There's also at the bottom of the page, it talks about tax about revenue estimates and how to get to those as well. That's the site that they use to get to those as well on our website. Tax expenditure report, tax expenditure budget. This is a report that actually was completed February of last year, 2010. It's not being updated this year. This is a biennial report, so it will not be done this year. one of the ironies of our tax expenditure budget is the timing is not in sync with the budget cycle for reasons that, that can be explained, but it was the legislator's decision to make that true. Tax expenditure budget is a legislative mandate, and the report released last year is the 12th Minnesota tax expenditure report. This was mandated by the 1983 legislature. Bills, for those of you who have been around a while, Representative Paul Ogren and Senator Eric Petty were the authors of the bill to require this, and the first study was published in 1985. Again, it's published on February 1st, even number of years. It's a major project. The project takes a lot of time. There are over about 300 different individual provisions that we estimate the tax expenditure numbers for. Today I want to, in terms of an outline, I want to talk about first, why do we do a tax expenditure report? What's the purpose of this thing? Talk a little bit about similar studies in other states. Go through what information is provided in the revenue in the tax expenditure budget. And then talk a bit about a required study that was we were required to do to be released February 15th of this year called the Tax Expenditure Review Study. This was required in last year's omnibus bill. And it ties in with the tax expenditure budget ideas. And then, time permitting, I want to address three other issues. How do we define a tax expenditure? We get a lot of questions about why is something not there, or why is this a tax expenditure? So you can sort of get both questions. And so I want to address the question of why things are or not considered tax expenditures in this report. Secondly, why don't we report the total dollars? Your fiscal staff has been, along with the Senate to some extent, has pushed as hard at times to come up with a total tax expenditure number. And we work with them, and there's some results in here, but why don't we give totals? We give all these numbers, but you've got to have 396 numbers to get the total, and why don't we just publish the total? And we want to explain why we don't do that. And finally, how do tax expenditure estimates differ from revenue estimates? They're not the same thing. If you introduce a bill to repeal a provision that's in the tax expenditure budget, you may get a very different number on the revenue estimate, and I want to explain just a little bit why. Okay, it's not just because we changed our minds. Okay, so okay, why a tax expenditure budget? The bill that required this, the statute says that it's to provide information on which sound policy decisions can be made. So this is obviously meant to help in the process of determining tax law and determining budget policy. If the only goal were to raise revenue, if that's all that you were trying to do with the tax code, then it would be best, almost everyone agrees, it would be best to have a broad tax base and a low rate. If you didn't care about anything else but just raising revenue, you could raise revenue most efficiently with the least distortion if you had a broad base and a low rate. But that's not what we do with the tax system, because we don't only want to raise revenue with the tax system, we want to do other things. If you want to encourage home ownership, then you might say, well, let's allow mortgage interest to be deducted on the income tax to try to encourage home ownership. If you want to recognize or reward combat veterans, then you could create a combat credit, which you've done. If you want to help farmers pay for bovine TB testing, you could create a bovine TB credit. If you want to help pay for child care, you can create a child care credit. If you want to help local governments, you could exempt interest on local government bonds so that the interest rates that local governments pay would be lower, because they're exempt from people receiving the income would not have to pay tax on it. And the point of a tax expenditure is that if you think about these items, in every case, these are sort of substitutes for direct expenditures. You could design a direct expenditure program, at least to some extent, to do the same thing. You could have child care grants instead of a tax credit for child care. You could have a grant or higher pay to veterans who've been in combat instead of doing it through the tax system. You can encourage home ownership in a lot of ways, not just with a mortgage interest deduction. So if you think about these as substitutes for direct expenditures, that's sort of the idea behind a tax expenditure. It's a substitute. It's just another way, in some ways, to do something you could, in some cases, do with a direct expenditure. But tax expenditures differ from direct expenditures for a number of important reasons. First of all, they don't show up in the budget anywhere. Okay, you will not find a line in any budget document that says what the mortgage interest deduction costs, or what the child care credit costs, it doesn't show up at all. Okay. It is not an appropriated amount, and as a result, there's not, in general, not a regular review process. Now, this committee has done some work in past years to really try to evaluate tax expenditures, but it's not part of the regular review process to look, take a careful look at tax expenditures the way that direct expenditures are looked at, because you don't have to appropriate them. They can, in some sense, go forward on autopilot without any action. If you don't do anything, they just continue. And they can grow or shrink, but they certainly can grow through time with no action by the legislature. They generally are authorized by different committees. So the mortgage interest deduction is a tax provision, but if you were trying to subsidize to improve home ownership or increase home ownership to a direct expenditure, you'd probably go through a different committee. You wouldn't be in the tax committee for that. And there's more limited access to program information when you use the tax code. Most tax information is confidential. So you can't as easily find out who benefits, how much they benefits, and so it makes it harder to evaluate a tax expenditure in some sense because you can't get the information that you could get in many cases from a direct expenditure program. And then, of course, there's the political difference. A tax expenditure cuts revenue, reduces taxes. It doesn't increase spending. A direct expenditure increases spending. A tax expenditure reduces revenue. Now, given the need to balance a budget, presumably, when you reduce revenue, you've got to either reduce expenditures or you've got to somehow get more tax revenue, maybe by raising the rate. But it's not free in some sense. But still, there's this political difference in terms of how we think about tax expenditures as opposed to direct expenditures because of the budgeting process. And tax expenditures just simply are not part of the regular budgeting process. And if you look at what MMB does in the budget process, they don't create the same kind of review of tax expenditures. Now, the term tax expenditure is meant to be a non-value-laden term. It's not the same as a tax loophole. Tax loophole sounds bad. Tax expenditure is maybe good, maybe bad. It's just a tax expenditure. There are good tax expenditures. There are very effective tax expenditures. It's not a pejorative term at all. It just simply says, here is a way that we're doing something that, in fact, has a cost and could be evaluated or could be looked at differently. But it's just a substitute for direct expenditure, or at least thought of in that way. But it's not a bad or good. Tax expenditure sometimes is said to have a liberal bias. The whole idea is a liberal scheme somehow. And you can, I mean, that case can be made. I mean, I'm not completely dismissing that case. But the best use, the most extensive use of the tax expenditure budget in the past was the 1980, it's not actually 87 when it occurred, but the tax changes happened in 87. The 87 tax reform by President Reagan. And President Reagan basically broadened the base and cut the rate. And what did he start with? He started with the federal tax expenditure budget. That was the guiding document for those proposals. That's where the ideas came from. And as a result of that, our tax code was simplified because we went along with those things. Our number of tax expenditures fell from 88 to 70. And our 1987 tax return had only 19 lines on one page. In fact, we actually encourage people to draw pictures in the blank space at the bottom of the page when they sent their tax returns in. Okay, can you imagine having blank space at the bottom of the first page of a tax return in Minnesota income tax? I mean, that's how... anyway, just an interesting bit of history. Now, I would say that because of the way we present the data in the tax expenditure budget, the claim that it is a list of ways to raise taxes is probably... It has more credibility that that's what it is because of the way we list them. We show how much revenue, in some sense, we're sort of showing how much revenue could be gained if you repealed a tax expenditure, if you got rid of it. You could think about it. We could present the data in a slightly different way, and I'll show this in a minute. We could think about not just how much you could raise in revenue, but if you took that revenue and lowered the rate, how much could you drop the rate and keep the revenue constant? And again, neither way is particularly right or wrong, but it's just a different perspective if you were to present it that way. The uses of the tax expenditure budget, some of you will look at the tax expenditure budget in different ways, and I can think of sort of three lenses people look through when they look at the tax expenditure budget. The first lens is that of sort of the efficient government administration or efficiency in government, which says, we look at it as a budget perspective, let's compare the effectiveness, or let's look at combined the effectiveness of direct expenditures and tax expenditures for a similar purpose. So let's look at the tax expenditures and bring them in and compare them to the direct expenditures in, say, childcare subsidies or in housing subsidies. But let's look at them directly and sort of say, does this work as well as the direct expenditure? How much should we be doing in one way versus the other? But it's really looking at how best to accomplish a goal by evaluating both together. The second perspective is, the second set of lenses is tax reform lens, which says, oh, let's broaden the base and lower the rate. And so you look at the tax expenditure budget for ways to broaden the base with the goal of reducing the tax rate. And that certainly has been the direction that several bills in the House have gone in recent years, where the tax expenditure budget was basically used as a way to broaden the base and lower the rate. That was sort of the way it was looked at. And the third perspective, the third set of lenses is when you're looking to fill a $6.2 billion gap, it is, in fact, where's the money? Where can we get some money without raising tax rates? And so that perspective also is out there, certainly. And neither perspective, none of these perspectives is wrong. It's just different ways to look at the same information, different ways to use the same information. Tax expenditure budget has almost 300, tax expenditures are listed. Most of them are in income tax and sales tax, quite a few in corp. But notice that we include gambling taxes, insurance taxes, local property taxes. So it's not, it basically is all taxes, not just the big taxes. By the way, federal tax expenditure budgets generally are just income and corporate, although sometimes they've thrown in, I think, some excise taxes. But state tax expenditure budgets generally try to include all tax types. You'll notice, if you looked at this carefully, there are two tax types missing that you might expect to be here. State property tax, statewide property tax is not on here, and neither is the Minnesota CARE tax. Presumably those will be brought in the next time. That's one of the things that we have been asked to, suggested to do. I want to spend just a minute just looking at one page. If you have the tax expenditure budget, you can look at the page, but if you have the handout, that may be just as well. This is from page 59 of the report, and this is just one item. This is the home mortgage interest. This is what it looks like on the page. And I want to just review what information is included in the tax expenditure budget. This is the itemized deduction for home mortgage interest and individual income tax return. We start with the legal citation at the top. Both the federal citation, where do you find this in federal law? If you want to know more details about exactly how it worked, you might want to look at the citation. And then the Minnesota statute as well. So in every case, if there is a federal law that we're conforming to or building on, we have both federal and state. Sometimes it's just the state citation. But legal citation first. Secondly, a fairly brief but very useful description of how it works. This is two paragraphs, but you get a lot of detail in very few words there about what is deductible, exactly what can you deduct, and the fact that it is subject to limitations at high income levels are at least mentioned in there. So a short description. What is this thing? How does it work? Most of you know a little bit of mortgage deduction, but on some of these, you may have no idea what it means, so this description becomes extremely important. Third, some history. When did this get put in place? When was it last changed? In this case, you've got the limitation was changed in a major way in 1987 with the reforms, and then there was also a limitation put on starting in 2001. It says here, starting with tax year 2011, the limitation is reinstated. That, of course, is a federal conformity item that some of you are looking at in terms of trying to conform to the new federal bill. And finally, then the number affected. When we know the number affected, we'll put the number affected in. So you find, so the 733,000 returns get some benefit from the mortgage deduction. Doesn't say whether it's a lot or a little, but they get some. So how many are affected? And finally, the dollar impact of the provision of the tax expenditure. Now the dollars down there. If you look at 2011, it says $418 million. That's roughly what you would gain if you repealed this. It's not always exactly like a revenue estimate, but I think you can think about it as sort of the cost of the provision or the benefit in terms of people gain $418 million because of this provision. So you can look at it either as a cost or a benefit to the taxpayer. But you could do something a little different here, and this was the comment I made earlier. Note that for tax year 2011, a 0.1 percentage point change in all three tax rates, our 7.35% rate, our 7.05, or 7.85, if we drop each of them by 0.1%, so we go from 5.35 to 5.25, from 7.05 to 6.95, if we dropped all three rates by that 10th percent, not that necessarily you'd want to do that, but if you did that, it would cost you $109 million. Okay, so what this suggests is that $418 million is about 0.4% You know, if you actually got rid of this, you could drop the rate by 0.4% at all levels. It might be another way to present information. Nobody has seemed very excited about presenting it that way in the past, but you could do something. The problem is, you can also reduce rates only at the bottom or only at the top, and so there's no clear way to present it that is not going to be questionable by somebody. But it gives an idea of how big this is. From a tax reform perspective, that might be a better way. But through those lines, this might be a more useful way to look at it. Just one comment. What's not here? What isn't here? A couple things aren't here. You'll notice there's no value judgments here. There's no evaluation. And there's some other pieces of information that are not here that might be useful. But this is just the facts. Okay? Our tax expenditure budget is just the facts. Very briefly, we don't say what the purpose is. We don't say whether it's successful in meeting its purpose. We don't even look at the distribution of the benefits from this in the tax expenditure budget. Now,
Mr. Chair,
we're like most states in that way.
Dr. Wilson, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Dr. Wilson. Just curious about what drives then the increasing cost of that expenditure. Is it simply more home ownership?
Dr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair. Representative Runbeck, I believe that some of this is due to the reinstatement of the. I'm not sure. It's either the increase in assumed mortgage interest, increase in mortgage interest, or it has something to do with the federal law, the change in federal law. But I'm not sure it's that. That seemed to be going the wrong direction. So, but it's basically the growth in these is generally an economic growth kind of a thing, a projection of what's actually happening to the things that are being deducted.
Okay.
Representative Runbeck?
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, that's 25% growth over just 4 years, so that's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. But that's all I have. Thank you.
In terms of how these are estimated, it's actually done from the same income tax model that's used by the economic forecast and used for revenue estimates. So it comes out of that model. I'm looking at Joel Michael because he might have a better idea. I don't think there's anything going on here that would drive the cost up because of a change in our law.
Mr. Michael,
I think it is just the economics. I don't know of anything.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know any more than
Mr. Michael. I've never heard you say that before.
it's also not true.
You know, I do think it's just, you know, the economics of the, and it these the parameters for the model are, you know, prepared by MMB, and it's their forecast of what mortgage interest will be. That's one of the things that they forecast, and so apparently they're forecasting a jump. You know, it could be tied to the mortgage, the housing slowdown and recovery or something.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Dr. Wilson?
Chair, we also know, of course, that all tax revenues were very low in 2010 compared to past years, and this is just part of the growth coming out of the recession as well. 41 states and D.C. had tax expenditures at the time this study was done by the Center of Budget and Public Priorities in 2009. I think at least Georgia has been added, maybe one more since then. But most states have tax expenditure reports. Ours has been lauded, as the quote says here, as one of the better reports that could serve as a model for other states, despite the things that are not in it that we just mentioned. This group, Center for Budget and Public Priorities, has a set of evaluations that he used in this report. Now, it should be published every 2 years, at least every 2 years. It should be found online. It should cover all major taxes. It should include the cost of exempting. It's a long list of things that I put the list here so that all the yeses are at the top for Minnesota and the noes are at the bottom. It may be worth just thinking about some. The three that are at the box around them on the slide, these three we do better than most, in the sense of doing things that they thought at least were good. We include the cost of exempting services from the sales tax. A lot of states just simply say, sales taxes are not taxable unless you specifically put them in, and so we're just not going to put them in a report. We're going to assume that they're not really in the tax. It's not like these are exceptions, and so they just don't put them in the report. So we have taken the perspective, and we'll see later, that the tax should be a tax on goods and services, and so we include services that are exempt services as tax expenditures. A lot of states that have an income tax do not include federal exemptions and deductions in their tax expenditure studies, so the mortgage interest deduction will not show up in theirs, even if they piggyback on it. And we include it because it really is a choice by the state to do something this way. You could have a credit instead of a deduction. You could limit it. Wisconsin does things in different ways. So it's not like all states just piggyback on the feds. It really is a conscious decision to do that. And so it seems more useful to put to include those in the study as well. And we have forward-looking estimates. Some studies just look at the latest year you have data for. And, again, it's not as useful for budgeting purposes. At the bottom are the things we don't do, and I'm not going to talk about the localities because we just don't have many local taxes. That's really the reason why some states have much more in local taxes, which makes it a more important issue. But I do want to say roughly, one thing we don't do, the second one in the box, is includes program categories. We don't say this is for housing or this is for, we don't say anything about a budget category or the next one. We don't say anything about the purpose. We don't say what the purpose is. And we don't include an evaluation of each expenditure. Now, only three states do, and some of those evaluations aren't very good. If you ask Deed to evaluate tax breaks that Deed has sponsored, you're probably going to get an answer that they're wonderful. And there's at least one state that just does that, ask the agencies in that way. And we also don't show distribution of benefit by income level, which eight states do some of, at least. Now, I would say that those of you who were in the House 2 years ago, no, we did an extensive study with House. I mean, we worked with House staff, and really they prepared the report, and we provided data. We did show some distributional information, and I just put some illustrations here from that report. That report is online somewhere. I mean, it's a House tax committee report, basically. But this is just a distribution of the mortgage interest deduction. This was done in a particular way. We were asked to do it by population deciles, 10% of households in the first decile, 10% in the top decile. Again, you can show distributional information in different ways, but this was sort of based on the tax incidence study and those definitions. And we did it for 16 income tax and sales tax items, but this was a special study. This was a one-time only. This was not part of the tax incidence study. I'm sorry, of the tax expenditure study. So these are just illustrations of what was done back then. Largely because of what's not in the tax expenditure budget. Last year, you enacted a law that requires us to do a study to be released by February 15th of this year called the Tax Expenditure Review Study. In that study, the Department of Revenue was told to present a report to the House and Senate that talks about how we define tax expenditures, talk about what the reference tax base is for each tax, sort of review that, see whether we're using the right reference tax base, to identify additional information that's not in the tax expenditure budget that would be needed if you wanted to evaluate tax expenditures, and then to recommend an ongoing process for reviewing tax expenditures, including a timetable and evaluation priorities, and to identify other ways to bring tax expenditures into the regular budget process, such as sunset requirements. So largely because of what's not in the tax expenditure budget, this is sort of saying, how could you build on the tax expenditure budget and build in some kind of an evaluation system? Now, that report is not done yet. We have been working with six tax specialists on this who've helped us with this report and have been meeting with us on this report from universities around the state. So it has been a time-consuming, but I think it should be a useful report, and I'm not going to tell you what it's going to say. So I got to leave something for when the report comes out. It is not finished yet. There were two other law changes last session that you should be aware of if you are not. One is you passed a law, if you were here, that all new tax expenditures must include a statement of purpose and a standard against which this is the provision's success may be measured. Now, we have not had statements of purpose in enacting tax purpose provisions in recent years at least. That's why we don't have a purpose tax expenditure budget. We don't know what it is because no one has ever said what it is. So this is a change from previous years. In addition, those of you who have worked in property taxes know that Mr. Ouellette has been over to talk and talked about the methodology change there, which is also an evaluation change in terms of how revenue estimates are done. Both of those are new things as well. So the study in these two things suggests some change maybe in store for the tax expenditure budget. The first of the three questions I said I wanted to address separately is, how do we define a tax expenditure? How do you know if it's in or out? How do we decide whether a tax provision is in fact included in this report or not. And we have a number of requirements. The last one is on the next slide. It's probably the most important, but a number of requirements that have to be met if we're going to include it in the report. Now, some of these are a little bit of a judgment call, and so this is just what is done for the report. First of all, we only include taxes that apply statewide. So local sales taxes at the city level and hotel taxes are not included in the report. The local property tax is, because it's a statewide tax, even though it's levied by local government. They're only tax expenditures if they provide preferential treatment. Now, that's in the authorization for this, the requirement for this study does use those terms. Exactly what preferential means, of course, is difficult. But we have said, for example, the standard deduction in the income tax and the dependent exemptions in the income tax are not preferential because everybody gets the same amount, at least by income, by filing status. Again, what is the reference tax base? What is considered to be part of the reference tax base, the basic tax structure? And we have judged those to be part of the basic structure. It has to have a revenue impact. So, for example, a more recent example here would be the CAR-Z provision last year. If nothing moves into the Ford plant that qualifies for CAR-Z, it won't have a cost. And as a result, it would not show up in the next tax expenditure budget if, in fact, that were the case. There's no list even of no-cost provisions in the study. So if you have a lot of provisions that are sort of in there that don't have a cost, they just don't show up. They're sort of non-operative provisions. It has to be, it's a tax expenditure only if it is not subject to an alternative tax. So the exemption of cigarettes from the sales tax, you can find it in the law. Cigarettes are exempt, but of course we put an in-lieu tax of essentially the same amount on cigarettes in a different way. And so since it pays an in-lieu tax or another tax, it's not considered a tax expenditure to exempt it from the sales tax. It's also not a tax expenditure. It's a tax expenditure, rather, only if it's not counted as a direct expenditure. And two things in particular, property tax refund. You might think of that as a tax expenditure, but it seems to be a tax expenditure, but it is a budget item. It's already got its line in the budget. It has an appropriation line. So it's not like the others that don't show up anywhere. And if it's already in the budget, then the cost is already shown somewhere, and so we have not included it in the
Representative Downey and then budget. Dabney. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we had quite a bit of discussion, in part due to me being a new person in the legislature and not understanding at all a tax expenditure, which almost seems kind of oxymoronic. But looking at the statute, it says it differentiates. It says by the granting of special and selective tax relief or tax expenditures. And so the statute seems to imply two categories, special and selective tax relief, i.e. allowing taxpayers to hold on to more of their income, and then tax expenditures. And yet we seem to, in this report, have lumped all of those together under the heading of tax expenditures. And I'm wondering if you could comment a little bit about whether or not there are actually some subdivisions within this tax expenditures report. Is it helpful to differentiate between a refundable tax credit, which I think could be seen as an expenditure because regardless of a person's income, the state is obligated to pay that refundable tax credit as compared to those that are not. Anyway, if you could help me understand why we lump all of these into this broad category called an expenditure when it seems to me there's quite a few important distinctions within the broad heading.
Dr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, I guess my first comment would be on the statutory language is that when that was enacted, a decision had to be made at that time on how to interpret that language. That has been 25 years ago when the decision was made. I think the term tax expenditure in the way it's generally used would include both categories in terms of how other studies have been done, how the federal government does its tax expenditure study. There was no distinction made between those two. I think you could make a distinction between the two, but I think the decision was made at that time that tax expenditure was a concept that included both, and it might be hard to draw that line. But I think it's a point well taken. The clothing exemption from sales tax is not designed primarily to increase clothing consumption. I mean, that's not the goal. Now, it might be a little bit, because I know the Mall of America may have that as part of the goal, but that was not the goal. It wasn't to encourage people to buy more clothing. It really had to do with with the fact that it was viewed as a necessity, clothing is a necessity, and we don't want to tax necessities. So it has a very different goal. If you were to assign that tax expenditure to a committee, presumably it goes to the tax committee only. I mean, it's not like there's any other committee for it to go to. It really is a... So I think it would fit into the into, if you wanted to define that category, that would be one that really is designed more for, I'm not sure you would say, sort of fairness of the distribution of the tax or something. I mean, that would be more like what the goal would have been than it's not trying to do something with, you know. So it's different from the other examples I've cited. So I think it's a point well taken, and we have not made that kind of a distinction. On the, and I may not have answered your question, but that on the refundable credit versus the tax expenditure, you could treat the refundable credit and call it an expenditure for budgeting purposes. It still only shows up on the tax return, and so but you could call it that. You can't. So I mean, you could. And I think the federal government actually does this. They include the refundable portion of that as an expenditure in terms of, is it a reduction in tax or is it an increase in expenditures? So you could do that. And it would change the totals. It would increase your total expenditures, direct your expenditure total, and reduce your tax expenditure. So it would make a difference. And it really is a judgment call how you do that. But it more is where it shows up in the budget documents and what line it shows on them. It still is run through the tax code. So in terms of evaluation, you'd want to do the same kind of evaluation of it, whether it was refundable portion or not. But in terms of the budgeting, where it is in the budget, you could make the difference, certainly.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Wilson, I apologize. I was not in the room at the very beginning of your presentation, so maybe you touched on this. But there's some argument in the committee at times that tax expenditures don't exist, that you're merely allowing people to keep their money and therefore no accounting needs or should be made of that because it's not the state's money and these tax expenditure things don't exist. Why are you creating this document? It would kind of flow from that. Can you respond to that, please, if you didn't already today?
Dr. Wilson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, I really think that the only response to that really is just to say that there is a use for this information even if you think you should keep all the tax expenditures. I mean, to some extent, when you say that, you're saying any tax expenditure, if you put it in the internet, it's called a tax expenditure, you ought to, it's a good tax expenditure. They're all good, basically, is what you're saying. And not only they're all good, but they all are things that ought to be kept and maintained because they're all effective as well. I mean, good and effective. So to say that is basically to say that it's one thing to say you don't want them in the study. It's another thing to say, are they good or not? It seems to me that we have put things in partly for informational purposes. It still is true that if you tax clothing, you can in fact have money that you could use to lower the rate. I mean, that's a given. So on some of the others. Some of the other tax expenditures are so close to direct expenditures. They're sort of direct expenditures in disguise a little bit. There are a couple cases, and again, these may be very good programs, but the combat credit is on the income tax. It's run through the income tax system. It's actually administered separately from the form, and we have to basically check the numbers with the Veterans Department in terms of who gets it. You could more easily administer that as a direct grant from them. You would hit the same people, and you would just miss a step because it wouldn't have to go information from them to us and have people file this separate form. It may be just as easy to administer the tax system, but it looks for that one looks like a direct expenditure in a much more direct way than clothing exemption does, because you couldn't mimic the clothing exemption with a direct expenditure. I mean, you wouldn't mimic it exactly. So some of them are more. Some of them are more clearly alternatives to a direct expenditure, and some of them are really, as Representative Downey was saying, they're more things that are fairness issues in terms of the distribution of the tax burden.
Representative Downey?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Downey?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and the members who were on the committee last year know that I'm one of the leading agitators on this kind of terminology issue. But what we'll start to hear over time is that anyone who actually favors some kind of tax relief the rhetoric will be that we favor spending and that we're big spenders because we choose to leave money in the private economy or in somebody's hands, maybe even in a targeted way. And I just want to bring up this point at the beginning so that as we start having these discussions and these debates that we don't kind of slip into that trap of automatically correlating anything that we do in terms of a tax relief provision to spending. And that's what we'll start hearing eventually. So we can leave the topic. I don't necessarily need to get into the big debate today, but I might have an amendment to change the title of this report and maybe some groupings that might be helpful to create those distinctions that I mentioned about true tax expenditures where the state is actually writing a check as compared to those where we simply are implementing tax policy that allows people to keep more money by virtue of tax policy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Dr. Wilson, please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we were at the second last bullet, not counted as direct expenditure, and I mentioned the property tax refund. Political contribution credit also is a line in the budget, so even though it looks like a tax, it's administered by Department of Revenue, it in fact is not in the tax expenditure budget because it's a line already on the tax credit. Again, it's a judgment call, but that's how it has been defined. And lastly, the legislature has to have authority to impose a tax, so it can't be something that the feds have said we can't do. So we don't include the income tax exemption on federal bond interest because we've been told we can't tax that. If there is a constitutional amendment, if the Minnesota Constitution says we can't do something, we also wouldn't include it here. In Ohio, there's a constitutional provision in Ohio that says that they can't put a sales tax on food. So if I were doing the study in Ohio under these rules, that would the exemption for food and the sales tax would not be a tax expenditure. Just for this reason. Again, you wouldn't have to follow that rule, but that's the rule that's been followed in the study. But the most important thing, I guess, is the tax base. What is the reference tax? What is it that you're saying you're judging expenditures against, these items against, provisions against? And the definition of the reference tax base is critical to how a tax is, what's in the tax expenditure. For income taxes, we are saying the income tax is an income tax, and we define income from all sources, less expenses that are reasonable and necessary to generate that income. And think about a couple things this means. This means that if you give more than true depreciation, deduction for more than true depreciation, that will be a tax expenditure by these rules in the income tax or the corporate tax. So accelerated depreciation or expense then becomes a tax expenditure. Now, if you want to say that, no, this shouldn't be an income tax, it should be a consumption tax, then against a consumption tax reference guide, expensing would not be a tax expenditure, but we have basically said we're going to evaluate this. The reference tax is the income tax defined fairly broadly. We have said that graduated rates are part of the reference tax, that different brackets for head of households and singles and joints, that's part of the system, part of the tax, the basic tax structure. And some of these could be called differently, but in the income tax, where we follow federal policy pretty much on how we define income. For corporate tax, in Minnesota, of course, the feds don't have to worry about a few things. The tax expenditure budget does make some assumptions about apportionment that many might find to be things they would say should not be the reference tax. And one of those is the equal weight apportionments. We assume in the tax expenditure budget, we assume because of some building on some sort of national agreements a while ago, we assume that one-third, one-third, one-third rather than 100% sales, that one-third, 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 one-third sales, one-third property, one-third payroll. But in apportioning a multi-state company's income to Minnesota, we assume that's the way that would be the reference tax base, and any deviation from that is a tax expenditure, so that you'll see a large number in the tax expenditure budget for our moving toward 100% sales apportionment. In addition, the tax expenditure budget assumes that a throwback rule is part of the reference tax, and again, that may be different states do different things on that in terms of what's assumed.
Excuse me, Dr. Wilson. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Wilson, can you comment a little bit about in what you're just talking about as it relates to sales taxes and how we count tax expenditures as far as pyramiding goes? You know, sort of the horizontal equity part of the tax, and then how vertically integrated businesses kind of do better under pyramiding and others do not, and kind of how does the tax expenditure report, you know, what assumptions does it make in treating the business input taxation process that's going on sort of embedded, even when there's a tax expenditure at the point of final consumption? So like taxing food, we don't, but the grocer is paying the sales tax in the pyramiding of the inputs. Can you just explain how tax expenditures address that in your report?
Dr. Wilson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lencheski, sort of like the last bullet on this page was getting at that. The base, we define, I mean, it's getting at one side of it. No, I'll get to the other side in a second. But we define the sales tax, reference tax, to be all final purchases of tangible goods and goods or services. And so the emphasis is on final, all final purchases. That basically means, for example, that capital equipment exemptions are considered to be tax expenditures. Now, if you really believed the sales tax should be a consumption tax, and by the way, all six members of this advisory group, since they are more of an academics looking at it, they all said sales tax is supposed to be a consumption tax. If you think that's true, then an exemption for capital equipment would not be a tax expenditure. We include it because the way we define the reference tax base in the study. Now, the flip side of that would be that's for capital equipment. But if you're talking about other inputs, we just a couple of things, and I know your question comes last, but let me make a couple introductory comments before. A couple of things. A lot of states include any exemption from the sales tax. Remember, there's no federal guideline here, so there's no federal tax benefit to follow. So states do a lot of things differently in their report. Some states say that when you have an exemption for purchase for resale, that's a tax expenditure. You know, we don't do that in the report because we figure why would you tax it when you buy it and then tax it again when you sell it. So that's not considered a tax expenditure. And also, things used up in the process of manufacturing or agricultural production or refining are also not considered to be a tax expenditure. Those are inputs into production that are sort of used up in the process. On the other hand, the exemption for some of the things that your restaurant would buy or your grocery store would buy, if you exempted them, we would in the study say that some of those are tax expenditures. And that's a judgment made basically by defining the reference base. About half of the tax expenditures listed under sales tax are exemptions provided for purchases by business. This includes business services, which are also in there, as well as the others. But about half of the tax expenditures are business purchases. Now, remember, 40% of the tax comes from business purchases, so it's not too surprising. But that whole section, the reference base for a sales tax, if you believe it should be a consumption tax, you would say that that's bad. And the reason you'd say it's bad is because of the pyramid that you mentioned, that if you want to exempt something, even if you want to exempt food, you actually have some tax passed through by taxing inputs. Even if you want to tax food, you don't want to tax it more than the rate. You don't want to tax it under pyramid. You may tax it, you may pay 6.875 if you tax it, but really you're paying 7.2 because of the taxes paid on the inputs. And so if you want to get rid of all pyramiding, you want to have a consumption tax base purely, and that's not what's used as the reference base here. So you really have to be a little careful with the sales tax area in how you're thinking of the sales tax. What is the sales tax supposed to be? And this judgment was made 25 years ago, and we have held it constant since then. I think sometimes we have erred in the direction of including things if the information is useful to have out there and if they're sort of borderline, if some people might think they should be a tax expenditure. So in some ways we've erred putting more in, and this may be a case where that decision sort of went that direction.
Irvis Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the follow-up. And Dr. Wilson, can you just, and I support the concepts that are being referenced here, and I don't think we should have pyramiding, and I think our business community is right to try to remove taxation of the inputs to business. Are you aware, I carry the bill for the 21st Century Commission Task Force that was Governor Plenty's broad tax, his commission's broad tax proposal that addressed sort of a lot of the issues we're talking about right now as far as removing the business pyramiding, you know, taxing the inputs and then broadening the base and lowering the rate and kind of a lot of things going on. And, you know, put that in bill form so we could all kind of see the revenue estimate and how it played out. And I know that that was a lot of work for all the people who worked on it, including the Department of Revenue. But at the time, I think it was Chair Vekich, and we were debating that. You know, there was a lot of discussion about how would any legislature really ever do that. Are you aware of any state that has a pure consumption tax that really has been able to do sort of the best economic policy principles in this regard?
Dr. Wilson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Teske, I mean, I don't think any state has a pure consumption tax. In some ways, we move closer to it than a lot of states. Our capital equipment exemptions are broader than most states have for that. States that, I mean, states that tend to tax more stuff on the consumption side often tax more stuff on the business side, too. So South Dakota has a broader base, but they pick up a lot of the business stuff as well. At least I think they do. So, I mean, in some ways, if we were to compare to other states, we may not be doing too bad. The 21st Century Bill, for example, that proposal was to exempt the tax on capital equipment purchased by the so-called 1987 services, which is, they're not 1987 of them, but it's the services that were made taxable in 1987, right. To exempt the capital equipment purchases because you were taxing the final service, and so you don't want to tax the intermediate, the purchases that they're making to create that. And that was certainly a move in that in the direction you're talking about.
Thank you.
Representative Linchesky.
Thank you.
Hey, Dr. Wilson, please continue.
Okay, so in conclusion, the reference tax base makes a lot of difference, and there is some disagreement over what it should be, I guess, particularly in the sales tax. Why don't we report a tax expenditure total for all items combined? Fiscal staff, we worked with fiscal staff in both House and Senate on this issue quite a bit. Our problem, some of you have personal experience about this issue, because when you look at the tax expenditure budget you look at the numbers for itemized deductions, and you say, well, what would we gain if we got rid of this itemized deduction, mortgage interest, what would we gain if we get rid of this one? And then you say, what do we gain if we get rid of both of them? You find out it doesn't add up the same amount that getting rid of them each separately would be. That you actually get less revenue. It's a negative interaction between the two. And I'll show you numbers out in a minute, but it's pretty easy to understand. Itemized deductions are things you get in excess of a standard deduction. So if you start nibbling away at itemized deductions, you move some people down to where they claim the standard deduction, and they can't go any lower than that. You can't take any more away from them. So the fact that it's the excess over the standard deduction that you're working with means as you move more and more down, you're going to get less and less money with each additional sort of bite at the apple on that. That's a negative interaction. There are also positive interactions where you actually get more revenue by doing two things than by doing one. By doing two things and by doing them each separately, that there's a positive interaction between the two. And as a result of that, we've always been hesitant and said, yeah, you really can't just add these things up. Now, under pressure from the fiscal staff, we have sort of revisited that, and I'll show you a chart in a minute if we've got time, Mr. Chair, that addresses that issue. I think you in some ways can add them up. You have to make one adjustment, but there is a sense in which adding them up probably gets you an underestimate if you wanted it to get a total. So, for sales tax, we're concerned about adding them up just because some things are left out. And they're mentioned on a later slide, but maybe we'll just mention them here. If you look at the services, the services, selected services, which is item 4.18 in the tax expenditure book, if you look at them, there are some things that are not in there. It says selected services, not all services. And things that aren't included in there include educational services, like taxing college tuition. They also include medical services, which is a biggie. I mean, medical services is a lot of the total services, and as a result, if you don't include that, I know medical services are subject to a 2% tax, which is like a 2% sales tax, the Minnesota Care Provider Tax, but that's a lot lower than 6.875%. So, again, some things are left out. So when you talk about a complete list, sales tax probably isn't as complete as it could be. There also are some tax expenditures where, even though they truly are tax expenditures by these definitions, if we actually tried to repeal them, I don't know the Department of Revenue could administer the law. When we piggyback on federal provisions, we may not have the information necessary to tax something if the feds don't, simply because we won't get the information returns unless we can somehow force people to supply the information to the taxpayers. Sometimes these things are not administratively possible either. So adding them all up, you can talk about that individually, and we don't point that fact out within the tax expenditure budget for individual items, which is probably something we should talk about somewhere in the document and have not. This is the example of itemized deductions. If you itemize, on the left-hand side, you have the dollars in the tax expenditure budget for fiscal year 11 for each individual item. Home mortgage interest, $418 million. Charitable contributions, $202. Real estate taxes, $184. Medical expenses, $64 million. And if you add up all of them, you get the number at the bottom, $880 million. The bottom of that column, $880 million. If you just add them up. But if you actually did a model run and you said, let's just get rid of itemized deductions, you'd only pick up $637 million more, which is a reduction of 27.5%. And that's, again, because when you take these away, people become standard deductions. Everybody goes to standard deduction. They still get something. They don't get as much. And so because the standard deduction, you have this negative interaction, which you probably, if you want to add them up, you probably got to take this money off of the total. On the other hand, there are positive interactions. The best example of a positive interaction, simplest one, is seniors get a higher standard deduction if you're elderly or blind. So you get a higher standard deduction. Now, that benefit goes to any senior who doesn't itemize deductions. If you itemize, you don't get it. But if you don't itemize, you get this benefit. Now, the tax expenditure budget has the number on the left-hand side, $15.5 million. That's what this costs. But that assumes you have the itemized deductions out there. If you were to get rid of the itemized deductions, then every elderly person would be getting this added standard deduction. The cost would go up to $28.4 million. So again, if you do things together, it may cost more than the single item, or it may cost less. Adding is just sort of dangerous, but I think we overstate the danger a little bit. There are a lot more positive interactions than there are negative. And if we just go down to slide 22, this was an attempt to come up with what you'd get if you add them up and made some adjustments. And I just want to look at the individual income tax side. The total, we just added them up, what's in the book, $4.898 billion of tax expenditures. Itemized deductions, you take off $243. That's the difference when you do them all. The plus 13 there is that senior and blind added standard deductions, so you'd add something more for that. And there are a lot more positives that you could add in. When you do multiple things, people get into higher tax brackets. So there's a lot of reasons why it could get bigger. So you probably could say the number has got to be bigger than 4669, and that is 63% of total income tax revenue. So if you want to state things in that way, we may come off a little too strongly saying you can't add them up, because most of the interactions are positive ones. If you take care of itemized deductions, the rest are positive, so maybe you can do it. And again, general sales tax, probably mostly positive interactions rather than negative, and so adding them up may not be as dangerous. On the other hand, I don't know anybody that wants to get rid of everything, so it sort of is a perhaps meaningless number. So it's hard to know what to do with it in that case. And the last question I want to address is that revenue estimates are different than tax expenditure estimates. Again, you have a bill that is introduced, and it gets rid of a tax expenditure, and you have a number in the tax expenditure budget, and that's what you expect the revenue estimate to show, and it comes back, and it's half, a third, something lower. And you say, why? Why? I thought I had this money. You said it was there, and now you're taking it away from me. A couple of things. One is revenue estimates, the tax expenditure estimates, as we've said, ignore interactions between provisions. So if you just add them up, you'll get a different number. Revenue estimates have to consider those interactions between them. We also have to consider the impact on other taxes. If you change motor vehicle registration tax, you will change the income tax in the opposite direction. So if you were to raise motor vehicle registration taxes, since they're taken as itemized deductions by some people, that will raise their itemized deductions and they will pay less income tax. And that, again, is an interaction that we show on our revenue estimate, but it doesn't show up in tax expenditure, which deals with each one at a time. And for revenue estimates, effective dates matter tremendously. If you have a corporate provision and you make it effective in fiscal year 11, we'll usually say you'll get only about 3/10 of the revenue from the first year in that fiscal year. So the number for fiscal year 11 in the tax expenditure book is going to be what, three times as high as what we'd show because we're, even though you, I'm sorry, even though you make it effective for tax year 11, the fiscal year is going to only pick up half of that year, basically, and it's actually less than half of the revenue. With sales taxes, if you make a sales tax change July 1st, you're going to only get 11/12 of revenue because taxes paid after July 1st by the consumer don't get to us until February, and so you've lost 1 month of revenue. So there are reasons why effective dates make a lot of difference. In addition, sometimes revenue estimates have to take collectability into account. The tax expenditure for publications, for example, magazine subscriptions are exempt from tax. If you tax them, some of those companies would not have Nexus in Minnesota, and we couldn't collect some of that tax. And the tax expenditure budget doesn't really take much care in trying to sort those issues out. So sometimes that was an issue that during the Ventura tax reform proposals on sales tax, the publications number came down dramatically when they made that adjustment to it at the Department of Revenue. So there's a number of reasons why they differ. So just be aware that don't expect the tax expenditure budget to give you the actual number. It just gives you some guidance as to the kind of number that you're likely to get. In conclusion, the tax expenditure budget includes, this is not a slide on your pack that you have, but tax expenditure budget includes much useful information, I think. I think everybody, no matter what your perspective, can find useful information tax expenditure budget, whether you look through the lens of a budget analyst or through a tax reform lens, or you want to raise revenue. I think there's something useful in there for you. I recommend that you read the short introduction. It is only 5 pages or so. It's got a lot in it, and it reinforces some of the points that are made here. And finally, the Tax Expenditure Review Study is going to recommend some changes in the tax expenditure budget, along with its recommendations for how an evaluation process could be set up to sort of bring tax expenditures more into the budget process and make an ongoing evaluation of them part of the regular process of government in Minnesota. The last slides on this are just some counting information. It's sort of interesting notes at the bottom of some of those, but I think they speak for themselves rather than my addressing. I always say counts of tax expenditures are not very useful in most cases because they've got big ones and small ones. And if you go to 100% sales apportionment from 70%, that doesn't increase your tax expenditure count at all, but it does increase the dollars. So it doesn't really give you a very good idea of what you're doing. The dollars are much more important than the count.
Thank you, Dr. Wilson. Representative Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Wilson, is the cost of implementation of these various statutes built into the evaluation that we see here, or where would I find the reference to the cost of having a system of collecting revenue and then making these tax expenditures? I was just thinking certainly this behavioral approach to tax policy must have a cost in creating, administering, evaluating, and maintaining. So, and I didn't know if I was looking at that or if I found that somewhere else. Thank you, sir.
Dr. Wilson?
Mr. Chair, Representative, are you thinking about the evaluation process, or are you thinking of actually the cost of getting rid of a tax expenditure, of repealing it?
Representative Bills?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm thinking it must be some time and effort in maintaining or implementing paperwork, shuffling. So if you have a tax expenditure of $492 million, but it costs the state $100 million to do that. So yep. Does that make sense?
Thank you. Dr. Wilson, does that make sense?
Yes. Mr. Chair.
That
is not included in the numbers, okay? So the numbers are just looking at the revenue change. I would say that in many of these cases, the administrative cost would actually go down because you could take a line off a tax return, or you wouldn't have to draw lines that we now have to draw between sales tax definitions. So it could go the other way, but certainly in some cases, and I think the most extreme cases would be if you either bring a lot more taxpayers into the system because of something, and there could be some sales tax items on that line, or if you do something where you have to force businesses to provide additional information to taxpayers, and that cost may be a business cost more than the department cost. But if we were to tax something where we say, well, businesses have to tell everybody how much they qualify or how much of this is they got, like. I'm thinking of an example. There's an exemption for awards that a business gives to employees. There's a limit on it, but but as awards. If you were to tax those, then somehow the taxpayer has to know how much. I guess it could be just included in the taxable income that's reported. But anyway, it would be some cost to the business certainly to administer that change. So there certainly are some costs. In most cases, those costs are very small relative to the revenue, but there would be some costs in some of those cases that would be noticeable.
Representative Bills?
Thank you.
Representative Marquardt?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for bringing this forward. This is always an interesting debate on these tax expenditures. And Dr. Wilson, I appreciate your testimony very much. You know, I was looking at the Bipartisan Debt Commission, and they really looked at these tax expenditures, and they identified about $1.1 trillion, which is roughly the deficit. But they referred to them, as you get into what you call them, as tax earmarks, and talked about how it's backdoor spending hidden in the tax code. So, but I don't, I really don't think, you know, getting into what we call that it is important. But I do think we can use this for when we get into budget times like this. For example, let's take... you know, Representative Banyan has the zero-based budgeting bill. And there, let's say you circle around policy goals. For example, property tax relief would be a policy goal. And you want to measure how effectively we're doing that. You know, if you kind of added that up in the tax expenditures, you've got $200 million in the property tax deduction. Then you'd have $300 million, this is on the expenditure side, about $300 million a year on property tax refunds. $200 on renters, and another $300 million on market value homestead credit. So you basically have $1 billion that you could say is going towards property tax relief. And I have no doubt that if we were to start looking around policy goals, which I think some of the zero-based budgeting does, policy goals, and say, how can we make it more efficient and more targeted, I know you would save money at the same time. With that $1 billion, I think you could actually make a better system, target your property tax relief much better, and probably at $800 million. Because right now, all the systems are not targeted. I mean, one may be, like for example, on the property tax refund, about two-thirds of it goes to the 9th and 10th deciles. Well, we know the effective tax rate on property taxes goes down the more you make, and yet that benefit goes up the more you make. So it's somewhat... You know, you could still provide the property tax relief to higher end, but it may, I think if we did that with every single area, that's why I think it's important that you would bring in, like, mortgage interest deduction. You know, if home ownership is our goal, let's look at all the pots of money, whether or not in tax expenditures or in expenditure, bring them together, look at, decide on what's efficiency, where can we target with these limits. And I know we would do all sorts of things. We would save money, we'd make more efficient, more targeted. And that's where I don't get too much into what they're called, but I think they can be very useful in what Dr. Wilson's bringing up. And last year, if you haven't seen this, or maybe it was 2 years ago when House research staff, I know working with Dr. Wilson, put together this one, really look at that, because it talks about kind of the effectiveness of some of these programs. And I think when we go through there, we'd probably keep most of them, you know. But I think they should be brought into the broader picture of this budget discussion and, you know, whatever year. And that's where I think this is really helpful, because I think on the state level, if you took all of your tax expenditures, and I know you can't, it's about $11 billion, I think, a year, which is pretty significant. You know, between income and sales, it's already about $10 billion, but it's pretty significant. And a lot of those we'd keep, you wouldn't even want to touch. But it is an area where you could make things a lot more efficient and save money, I think, at the same time. But I just thanks for bringing this up today, and thanks for your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, I agree with, I think, most of what Representative Marquardt said in terms of the helpfulness of the information and knowing what these pots, various pots of money are. But when we call tax relief an expenditure or spending, when you get outside the pie charts of state government and realize the broader implications in terms of the interaction between the private sector and the public sector, cutting spending on an appropriation leaves money in the private economy. Cutting spending on a tax expenditure actually pulls money out of the private economy. And so I think our terminology actually is an extremely important distinction, because the impact of what we do here in totality and its relation with the private sector is very, very different. And so I just think some accuracy and precision around these different types of tax relief and tax expenditure buckets is really helpful when we think about the broader implications of our public policy here in, at the state.
Thank you, Representative Downey. Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree completely with what Representative Downey has been saying here. I think it's important to recognize that in politics, as in life in general, words do matter. Words are very important, because we're dealing with reality and then how to describe reality. And to the extent that our words differ from what reality is, the more words become sophistry. And I think that's what the tax expenditure terminology is, sophistry. Representative Downey is exactly correct. When you reduce direct spending, government spending, you decrease substitution effects and you stop canceling out more efficient private sector investment. The opposite is true for these so-called tax expenditures, which is really just tax relief. So thank you, Representative Downey, for your comments.
Representative Gawalt, then Lesh, and then that's anybody else has questions for Dr. Wilson, then Representative Lencheski has a question regarding another issue. Representative Gawalt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, as a journalism guy myself, I like the exercise in definition of terms and language, and I think it is important. But I wanted to get back to Representative Markworth's point. I think focusing on the policy goals of some of our taxes is a great idea, and I like the fact Representative Banning is kind of getting us focused back on the idea of zero-based budgeting. There are some who say you actually end up spending a lot of money doing zero-based budgeting in its purest form, but there are some real practical implications to going back to the policy, saying what are we trying to accomplish with this, and then looking at are we doing it the best way possible? Are we targeting it sufficiently? Are we doing it most efficiently? So I appreciate that comment, and I realize we've got a short-term budget deficit to fix, and that's going to require some very tough decisions. But I think just as much this committee needs to start thinking about those sorts of things so we can put ourselves on a longer-term, more sensible approach. And so I'd embrace that. I don't know where we do that as a committee, whether we break out in work groups and look at some of that kind of stuff or ask the departments to break some of these things down and bring back recommendations. But I think that's something we don't want to lose sight of as we're trying to do the near-term thing of fixing the budget.
Thank you, Mr. Gottwell. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to note, you know, Representative Dabney's suggestion that some people believe that tax expenditures are made up and make-believe. You know, I don't know. They could be. It's possible they're as real as the Easter Bunny or the Tooth Fairy or the Queen of England.
Representative Lesh, I don't understand a thing you just said. Thank you, Representative Lesh. Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if we're adjourning and I'm in the way of us adjourning, but I do think that it's important to identify that the presumption underlying Representative Downey's comments and Representative Wardlow's comments are that it is always more efficient for capital to be left in the private sector. And I think when you look at the issue of paving roads or building bridges or educating children in public schools, there's a high degree of efficiency of my incremental addition to that pot in making the whole system work, and that those investments make the private economy work. So, I mean, I understand the point that you're making, but I think the presumption that you have is that in all cases, money left in the private sector is more efficient. And I think we know in the case of some instances of inherited wealth from generation to generation that our founding fathers didn't really want to see because they thought it was an inefficient allocation of capital, it's not always true that the private sector is the most efficient place for that money to be.
Okay, Representative Downey?
Well, just to be clear, I actually agree with that. I don't hope I didn't say that, and I think everything I've tried to argue along the way in terms of asking for return on investment for bonding projects and some sense of the measurement of outcomes for most of our legislation. I actually agree, because I always think there is a trade-off between whether you leave it in the private sector versus you pull it into the public sector. And if we do in the public sector, then there should be some kind of standard by which we try to measure that contribution. And I would agree with you on the points that you made. So I think it's more just accuracy and terminology and understanding that when we talk about cutting spending in each of these two domains, they're very different in terms of the interaction between the public and private sector. I just want to make sure we don't lose sight of that as we go along. So I actually agree, I think, in bulk with Representative Hortman's and Representative Marquardt's comments.
Any other questions or comments for Dr. Wilson? Thank you very much, Dr. Wilson, for your presentation to the committee. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you would permit me, I have a handout so that all committee members can understand what I'm talking about. And I just have a question unrelated to what we heard today. And that is, this handout has all the bills that are tax bills that are sitting in other committees. And so, Mr. Chair, I was hoping we could just have a couple-minute discussion for the benefit of everybody on the purview of this committee. And it's my opinion that, you know, you should fight really hard to ride herd on everybody who wants to change the tax code in Minnesota who doesn't sit on this committee. Over time, you know, legislators get pretty crafty on both sides of the aisle on how they can avoid a tax chair, and it requires diligent staff, and I'm sure you've got it. They seem like they're wonderful people, to really sort of dog what's going on out there in the referral process. And so, you know, Mr. Chair, I hope you would really, on behalf of all of us here, assert your authority to ensure that all tax bills end in this committee. And certainly, you know, as the chair over the division that refers down to Chair Runbeck, you know, to give her the due diligence to work through all the property tax pieces. I know she's got the accounts for the local sales taxes. But then they, of course, come back through you, Mr. Chair, and I want to support you in making sure that that's the case. And I wonder if you can just kind of think about with us how what process you might use to ensure that all the authors that are on this blue sheet right now know that they're carrying tax bills. Often they feel that they're not carrying a tax bill. They think the issue is something that matters to the Health Committee or the Ag Committee or whatever, and that is all true. In the end, they're changing tax policy. And in the rule, in the Minnesota House, and it's in the new rules you're intending to adopt, you know, the accounts sit in this committee, and the rules say that anything that affects tax policy, whether it raises revenue, cuts revenue, or has no impact on the dollars at all, but simply change a policy, need to come to this committee. And, Mr. Chair, I'll tell you that Representative Broad and Representative Coles were very diligent in ensuring that every fee increase, every revenue of any kind, every change to property tax law, everything got to the tax committee. And we supported each other in that, and we wanted members who serve on this committee to be sure that they're able to have a say-so on tax policy as it arrives here. And so, you know, I was just thinking, I was listening to a Senate committee last night, and I heard members talking about raising hotel taxes for the Viking Stadium. And so there's an example that would and need to get through this committee and to represent Runbeck's committee. It's a local tax. Hotel taxes are local sales taxes. That's what they are. And, you know, so we're you know, it's still January. We've got quite a few out there. And I'm just wondering if you can talk to us, rather than you and I privately, to the public publicly about your intention to kind of, you know, get everybody getting their tax bills back to this committee. Because my experience has been they're not going to come and tell you. They're not going to come and say, oh, by the way, I have a tax bill. You know, they're going to happily not come to taxes. So can you just help us think through what your intention will be in this committee this year?
Well, first of all, Representative Lincheski, you can't question my intentions. That's against House rules. But that being said, what I intend to do is we will, I think the, you know, breadth and scope of this committee is very wide, and we will have the long arm of the tax committee looking at this. And just to inform the committee, and I'm very glad you brought this up, because this is a kind of a test. This is the test, because we have been marking every bill that's been introduced that says tax or looks like tax, or I even think it might be a tax. And we will be requesting those. We have requested some. Some authors have been made aware of it. So I'm going to go back and see if we got them all, because we sit in our meetings and we look through the introductions to find those. A good example would be in a jobs committee. There was an issue regarding an unemployment. I call it the unemployment tax, but the author was thinking that maybe it was an unemployment fee or an unemployment insurance or things like that. So that bill will be coming to the tax committee. So I really appreciate this. This is a very good point, and I think the committee and the public does need to know what my intentions are on this issue. One thing, we don't refer to down to property taxes. We say over to property taxes. Now, everything I've just said could be trumped by direction from on low. We're on the fifth floor, the fourth floor where the leadership corner is. We refer to that as on low. The only exemption would be to my comments if we hear from on low that something will be done differently. That would be, and we will talk about that. I have a crack staff. You're absolutely right. They are wonderful, and we are watching that very, very closely. And it'll be fun to go back and see how we did here. But there may be a few extras here. I don't know. We'll see. My guess is we've got most of them tagged to go get. But we need them to go through the other committees. They need to go through first. You want them as far away as possible, then bring them to taxes, and then where they go from there. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, it is tricky because people will go and draft to make sure that the word tax isn't in there. So, you got to keep looking, and I think you'll do that. And I'm glad to hear you're going to take that approach. You know, I want to support you in any way I can, even in your leadership. I mean, we absolutely were in that situation where occasionally folks didn't want to have to come through taxes. And I hope you will, with Speaker Zellers, really fight hard for the purview of this committee. You know, we know people get on ways and means and taxes for a reason, and that's kind of where everything kind of goes down, and I think people know that. And so, I'm glad to hear that. I will tell you that, you know, I should be fair and say there were occasions when I did not hear bills, and in fact, unemployment was one I did sometimes and one I didn't sometimes, and I actually listened to Representative Gunther and Mahoney have that debate in their committee on the tape, and there was a shock from Representative Mahoney, and Representative Gunther said Chair Davids wants it, and you know, I was of two minds on that. I think the tax forfeited lands bills sometimes are taxes and not, but you of course will make those decisions on your own. I just would appreciate if we can kind of know as you do that, you know, what you're thinking on things as they come up, and I know it's often easier to not vote on difficult things, but I'm glad to hear you're going to make sure that we in fact do. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the time for this matter.
And thank Representative Lincheski, and we will work on that because we do want to have a vetting of the tax issues through the tax committee here. So we will, and any member of the committee that sees something that we might miss, if you know, just ask us. I mean, do you have this one, you know, I almost said targeted. You can't say that either. On your list of ones you want to see. And I think that Representative Bisgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, it used to be, it's my recollection that we used to actually state in statute that a tax was a tax, license, fee, anything that raised revenue. Mr. Chairman, do you know what, isn't that still in statute? Or if it isn't, when was it taken out of statute? Do you know?
Thank you, Representative Bisgins. I'll refer to Mr. Michael.
It is.
And please don't say you don't owe.
Nah.
Not twice.
It's in there.
Oh, sorry.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bisgins, yes, in the statutory definitions in Chapter 645, there is a definition of tax that's very expansive. However, the jurisdiction of this committee is not determined by statute but by House rules. And so it is a matter of interpreting the House rules to which that statutory definition does not strictly apply.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, I know you're law and order all the way, so you're going to follow statute, aren't you?
Well, statute, and also, plus, you know, I'll have to look at it really quickly today on the House floor what the proposed rules are, because we'll probably only spend about 10 minutes on them, so I'll make sure we get them quick. Representative Lincheski.
Mr. Chair, and I was just asking our DFL staff, and I apologize, I did not bring the rule. And I think Representative Bisgins raises a good point, and that statute exists, And it is in, it's referred to in House Rule, and I know you're going to be taking up the rules soon, and, you know, maybe it's, you might want to find a little time to reread the rule that we had and see what you're doing with it and what you want to think through with that. We kind of evolved on that because we had every single solitary fee, as members of this committee know, come through here. If you raised fishing licenses a buck, you came here. You know, it didn't matter. It was all here. And over time, you know, we sort of killed everyone in hearing everything. And we were looking for a little bit more flexibility on some things that were really teeny-weeny, mostly because, honestly, Senator Pogemiller came up with that legislation with Representative Krinke. And I was on that conference committee, and I supported it. They put it in law. You know, well, then the Senate never, ever followed it. No surprise to anybody. The House did, you know, diligently. And we brought all the fees through taxes, and the Senate never did. Never. So it got to be very frustrating to work with how Senator Bach was addressing these issues and Senator Pogemiller. So I think you may want to think through that with Senator Ortman on how you're going to deal with that, because it is a lot of time. But the rule references, and I think what we finally did is we said with an agreement with the tax chair and the Ways and Means chair, a discussion, there could be, you know, at times not sending the fee to taxes. But I, you know, that's clearly in your, that's your decision making as the majority, but I think that's another issue to, for clarity. You know, when people say we don't need revenue, Representative Biskins is absolutely right, that's all new revenue. And I would support him in his decision, in his sort of offering here to make sure those bills get in front of this committee as well. So thank you, Representative Biskins and Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lencheski. And just kind of a side note, if your House researcher would like to sit at the table, she's certainly welcome, or whoever it is. That way you can
great. Ms. Bergman's
communicate
wonderful.
Better. Yes.
And Representative David, Mr. Chair, you know, having sat right next to her for a number of years, how what an excellent staff she is, and I know you have the same, so they'll be spending a lot of time together. We appreciate that offer.
And she's certainly more than welcome. We've got some extra seating here.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, good, unless there's any other questions, good government all the time. We are adjourned.